creators of the podcast dungeon, you have come across another goddamn horror podcast with Graham Fay, Jonas Barnes, and Ryan Danley.
Welcome, everybody, to yet another goddamn horror podcast. I'm one of your hosts. I'm Ryan Danley. I'm actually coming to you from a very sunny Seattle, Washington today. I'm hanging out in a buddy's Airbnb, recording the show before I do a comedy show here in the beautiful Emerald City of Seattle. Kind of fancy. So I'm not coming from Portland today. I've actually barely been in Portland I was all through California. I went to Santa Barbara. You guys ever been to Santa Barbara? I did comedy in Santa Barbara, and I told all those fancy people to smoke crack. It was like seriously like one of the best moments of my comedy career. It was like I told them I didn't even know if Santa Barbara was really a place or just something that daytime television made up. But
it was a place that was made up in Melrose Place when that was a thing. They're just like, yeah, Santa Barbara's over there.
But no, you know what though? Like I did a bunch of comedy in Sacramento, and Sacramento was amazing. Like Sacramento is underrated city. I'm telling you.
I've heard.
I want to shout something out in Sacramento for any of our listeners. If you're ever in Sacramento, go to a place that's in Old Town Sac called Evangeline's. It fucking rules. It is like the old haunted costume shop that you could think of in a horror movie. It's that place. Like it's a two-story costume shop. It fucking rules.
Yeah, downtown.
How do you spell that? E.
Evangeline's. Yeah, it's E V A N G E L I N E S.
Thank you.
It is dope.
Old Town Sack. I did a open mic down there after one of our shows, and they. It feels like you're like in like the OK Corral or some shit. Like it's like, you know, it's like
oh, this very is like old, old
Westy. So how's Brooklyn, guys? I'll shut up.
Brooklyn, good. Guys. I've been working nonstop with kids. I'm working with like four or five families now, like eight kids. Every day I'm running around with like 6 year olds and infants. It's pretty wild. Yeah. I'm a nanny basically for like a bunch of, it's basically like a bunch of families all together, and I just work for them all week, every week.
Wow.
It's like when you see somebody walking like eight dogs on one leash down the sidewalk. It's like that, except for like 6 year olds. Yeah.
Four kids, 6 year olds, like flanked walking across the street in Brooklyn. And one of my friends who I used to work at a bar with walked by and was like, what the fuck? Because I don't have any kids. I look like this. And I'm
hey,
sounds dope. At least you're getting paid, because I have two kids and, you know, it's free. I'm a slave. Okay?
Right. You pay for them. I got two kids too. And they're expensive. Graham, do you want to introduce our wicked rad guest?
I do. I'm super excited about this one. We have today writer and director Christiane Cruz, who recently we got to see her short Aftertaste, and it fucking rules. So thank you so much for being on here, Christiane. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so tired today. I mean, we just said I have kids, so I don't have to explain myself, but you know. I'm good. I'm great. I'm tired. I'm everything everywhere all at once. You know?
Awesome. Also a banger of a movie.
Also a great movie.
Yeah.
Here's my recommends are coming in early. So
they are, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, that's highly recommended by everybody.
It's hilarious when somebody's like, that movie was all over the place. I didn't like it. I'm like, it's in the fucking title. It's right there.
Yeah, they prepared you. Right, they prepped you and everything.
Totally.
Well, so you're from Canada, actually, I think, right?
I am. I'm from Toronto, born and raised.
I am a huge Canada fan. I want to be Canadian. I have only been there once for one night in my life, and it was the greatest. And it's just, I built it up in my mind for it's where I belong. But yeah, anyway.
I mean, people always are like, oh yeah, you know, like in America, you're like, oh, you guys really have free healthcare over there. And then you talk to Canadians, they're like, our healthcare sucks. You have to wait in line. And I'm like, what? Yeah. But it's no different from being at Kaiser.
Well, listen, like waiting in line might not be fun, but you know what else isn't fun? Having to take an Uber instead of an ambulance. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, like it's like a, like if you know, do the math. I hate bleeding on the back of somebody's Ultima. You know?
Yeah.
So. You're like, dude, I'm gonna have to like knock down a couple of stars off your rating. You bled all over my car. Like,
yeah. But only one, because it's America.
Just one. Just take down one. Yeah, it's fine. It's always funny when you see a medical bill come back and it's like ambulance ride, $2,000. It's like fucking sweet. All right, cool. Just going to go ahead and buy a bullet now.
Exactly. That'll be way cheaper and more available. Yeah. We've had a couple of Canadian guests.
Good people. I mean, for the most part, I have recently I met somebody. He's a showrunner of like a prominent HBO show, and I just talked to him at a party, and I was like, "Yeah, we're good people, right?" And he was just like, "I filmed for 11 months in Toronto, and everyone was crap. Like, everyone was so mean, and it was even worse because everybody thinks you're all so nice." Maybe your attitude.
Yeah, like, I mean,
was it perhaps. Succession? It sounds like somebody from Succession.
No, it was not.
It's funny, if you go to Montreal for the Just for Laughs Festival, that's like the only experience I have, you know, for Canada, that's my experience. That, and I've gone to Vancouver a couple times when I used to live in Seattle. But whenever you go up to Montreal for Just for Laughs, people aggressively assume that you speak French. Like when you come up there as a comedian.
Oh, yeah. Oh, let me explain that for a second, because it's not that they assume, it's that they sincerely are so proud of their language that they will just do it. It's like just like a fuck you. Like you don't speak English. Like
they're just digging their heels.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Why is it all got to be English?
Right.
But, you know, there's also like a trope of the people in Quebec. They have had issues in the past. They like very much want to separate from the rest of Canada. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not speaking for everyone as a whole in Quebec, but very partisan area. And one time there was like a big disaster and they went to France to try to ask for help. And France was like, you're still a part of Canada. You don't need to come to us for help. So that should explain everything to you.
Yeah.
It's in Montreal, but poutine is sick. Nothing's better than poutine.
Poutine feels like the most American dish ever, except that it's Canadian. Like, yeah, exactly. It feels...
It really does.
It's like, you know what these cheese curds need? Gravy. Gravy. You know?
Right. Really fatty animal lard. Exactly. Yeah. But also, what else feels super American that's Canadian? Football. Basketball.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right, I learned that in an ad. It's not like I actually knew that recently in the Super Bowl ad.
Well, so speaking of food, Aftertaste is fucking great.
Look at that transition. Look at that transition. Yeah, like,
so it's like about 10 minutes, and it takes place in a high-end restaurant in the kitchen. And it's about hungry ghosts, which if you can sort of give a background or explain that a little to our listeners.
Yes. So I guess the best place to start is I'm a fucking fat ass. I love food so much, like so much. Mm-hmm. I specifically moved to San Gabriel Valley because, you know, like chefs like David Chang lives here. Like you just get to throw a stone. I grew up in the city. I grew up like going to, you know, in Toronto, it was, you know, such a wealth of immigrant cuisine, and that has been such a driver in my life. And it's not something that I realized was an important driver that I could actually creatively, you know, weave into the fabric of what I do in writing and directing and making shit. It's like, I didn't realize that I could thread those things together. But not that long ago, I was gifted a, I'm Filipino, but I was gifted a DNA test, and I found out that I was like 33% Taiwanese. And I was like, what the fuck? It explains why I love Peking duck and like, all these things, like so much, you know, like it's just in my palate. I love the food. And that was sort of my segue into diving a little more into the mythology of the culture. People always ask me, they're like, you're primarily Filipino. Why didn't you do a Filipino short first? I was like, well, they didn't have a hungry ghost. So I went to the 33% of myself and said, find something. And I read this amazing, I read this amazing like mythology and this lore about, you know, there's rituals, there's ritualistic, very anti-communist, factions within Taiwan, in old Taiwan. Like if you look at like old South China and Taiwan, there's a lot more like lore and really amazing things that is, something that even some of my Taiwanese friends had no idea about. I spoke to a lot of my friends to, you know, start talking about this research that I had done specifically on Nuo, N-U-O, Nuo culture. And it's essentially like Taiwanese witchcraft in a sense. Mm. So there are still in very small farming communities in Taiwan and in southern China, there's still some practice and there's some keeping up of this, you know, ancient ritual. And it could be anything from dance for exorcism to food for exorcism. And obviously I chose the latter.
That's so cool. That's really fucking fascinating to see.
I would fully choose food to be exercised.
Yeah.
Don't waste all that delicious pea soup. Like, it's like, it is, no, I would totally, no, it's all, like, the exorcism of the food. I am a food person as well. I have actually a culinary degree and have worked in food my whole career. And so, like, whenever I see that in, you know, taking place in the sort of, like, the showing of the kitchen and the showing of those sorts of things, it's you did a very good job portraying that. It's a pretty like as a kitchen person, it was relatable and it was very good. And the, you know, I mean, and just that side of the industry, like the you know, so I commend you on that, because you know, it can go a lot of ways, like with the kitchen, like what it looks like in television, and you killed 100%. It knocked it out of the park. And
I mean, I watched it as a sous chef and I thought the same thing, like, yeah. You know, I was a sous chef for years.
Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah. And like, as I was watching it, I was like, this is accurate, like, especially to a point when you get to a point of a kitchen that is that high level, where you're talking like Michelin star, like, yes, aggressive head chef, like, yes, the very regimented type of, like, you know, atmosphere that you were painting in there, it was perfectly portrayed. Like, so, yeah, very.
Well, I did, and I do prep, and then my wife cooks. But that's my experience.
Look at you.
Yeah. No, I can't actually cook a full meal, but I can prep like a motherfucker.
Guess what? Being a sous chef, pretty much just prep. That's what we do. No.
But
like, I made the sauce, son of a bitch. Like,
the shots of the food are fucking breathtaking. They're so good. And I love that kind of, and the intensity of the kitchen built so well with the intensity of the supernatural aspect going through it. And I also just fucking love the opening when she's talking about the mythology and stuff, and she goes, my grandmother left me a gift, but it's a curse. And I kind of knew the line was coming, like, it's not a gift, it's a curse, but like, it's a fucking curse. The way it's said is just perfect. And like, it opens, and it was such a good thing. And Isabel Han, I think.
Yes, she's the best.
She was fucking incredible. And the dude that played the head chef was awesome. But yeah, yeah, just a 10 minutes of like, just all I wanted was more out of that.
Yeah, that's literally what every, I think I get like 3-star ratings on Letterboxd because they're like, well, only because I wanted more. And I'm like, okay, right. Give me more money. I don't know what to tell you. But, you know, I stretched that dollar as much as I fucking could. And I mean, thank you so much for all of your compliments. And I mean, obviously, I actually have never worked in a restaurant. I once worked in a diner in college. And it was like so small that it was just one waitress and one chef. And so like, I've never actually witnessed any of this stuff in person. Instead, I watched Chef's Table, Top Chef, YouTube, talk to, you know, friends who've worked in this life, have been anywhere from like waitresses to, you know, to the head chef at a restaurant. And then particularly I spent time, kind of just, I have a friend, okay? I have a friend whose husband is a Michelin star chef, okay? So first of all, I needed a food designer. That was very important to me. But I asked this Michelin star chef if he could give me somebody, specifically I asked for an Asian woman to come in as the production designer for food. Specifically for food. She would create a menu with me. We would, you know, go through ways to actually go and show all the stuff off. And I actually truly have a full menu with like everything, as if I were building the menu for an entire film, is what we like created. And then we picked a couple things out of our full menu to actually make for the piece. I think we actually ended up with like three dishes. So that was so important to me, and it wouldn't have happened if I didn't have her. As a person that's done that job, that Kai, our lead, is played by Isabel Hahn. If we didn't have Sarah Kang to who's been in her shoes as a young person, as a woman in a male dominated kitchen, you know, coming off of culinary school, and or in fact, actually, Sarah has a different experience. She didn't go to culinary school. She instead learned to cook from her immigrant grandparents. She's Filipino and Korean. And she started, you know, going to work at like a French restaurant, and they would just like balk at the fact that she didn't know French cuisine. So she learned on the spot, and it was really, really tough. And, you know, and she's fucking grinding still now, and, you know, doing her own pop-ups and shit. But that life is so hard, and it's so akin to what it means to hustle through the entertainment industry. So I really like that, you know, I could find people that really cross both borders who've worked in restaurants and worked in entertainment. So all the actors that you see, except for Isabel Hahn, are all chefs in their own right. They're also actors as well, but they're all chefs. So that's also the reason why technique looks good and food looks good. In fact, Isabel, at one point, I very much remember her picking up a whisk, and she was whisking like this, and like Sarah just flies in and like changes her position. She's like, you'll be too tired if you were whisking like this for hours. So giving her proper technique, and it works so well because Isabel was supposed to be a fish out of water. This was supposed to be her first night on the job outside of, you know, her being top of her class at CIA, gets into this job because she's like, oh, I'm fucking made it. And it turns out to be the fucking worst night of your life, which is, I think, speaks to a lot of people. I am babbling, y'all.
No,
all stuff that we want to hear. Awesome.
It turns into a terrible night just on the job, and then it gets worse. Like, but yeah, the goat, like the hungry ghosts, look so cool. I don't know, like,
yeah,
like how, I'm not sure if could you explain like how, what they're there for? Like, are they typical ghosts that when like, or are they people that are possessed and want food? Like,
certainly. Okay.
They feel like an attachment curse is what they feel like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So essentially, who you are in life, and this comes back to a lot of like, I think, even if you were looking at like Buddhist culture, it, who you are in life, you're going to continue on being in death because that cycle is not complete. Like if you're a shit person and you're greedy in life, when you die, you ultimately become a hungry ghost because you're so greedy. Like you just can't find happiness in the life that you have. So you end up getting stuck into this, you know, cycle. Now you are in hell. There's no doubt about that. You're going to be in hell. However, on the seventh lunar month of the year, the gates of hell will open and you have a chance to essentially redeem yourself. The ghost has a chance. And one of those things, again, this crosses over into like Latino culture with the ofrenda and having pictures up of people that have passed, especially in your family, and putting them up on an altar, things like that, burning joss paper, and then again, food offerings. So those are some ways that you can help your greedy fucking family members cross over and find peace. That's
what awesome. Yeah, that's super cool. Actually,
now imagine if you were a person that, say, killed somebody. Okay, right? There's varying degrees. I could just be like never fully satisfied, and then like I come back as a ghost on the you know, at my time, and my family burned enough paper and I ate enough food, and all of a sudden I'm good, I'm freed. But let's say you actually killed somebody, right? Like let's say you're a fucking horrible person.
Yeah.
Like lowest level of hell, and you come back, what would you have to do in order to redeem yourself? What kind of magic would need to happen at that level to redeem a person like that?
Oh, wow.
That's the hungriest of hungry of hungry, where like you're talking protruding bellies and long fucking necks where you can't even breathe like for the rest of eternity. Like it's that level of bad, right?
I love it. I want to see this as a full movie.
I immediately want that. That sounds like straight up sounds like a David Cronenberg ghost story. What I mean? Like when you describe the different types of ghosts and everything, that's also something that I think, like, just watching the 10-minute short, like there's already pieces in it that you can tell have a lot of legs on them, like as far as putting it to a feature length type of thing. Like, yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Just enough in that 10 minutes to say like, oh, this is easily a full, you know, a full length feature, if not more than one, you know,
or a TV show, which is
something. Yeah. You could do it like a serial show, like every like episode, like the gates are open again and you have to do a different
Midnight Mass style.
The idea in my head that I'm toying with is like, if you were to take White Lotus, for example, how they move around from country to country.
Yeah.
Apologize. That's exactly like if Mike Flanagan did White Lotus is what like I've been thinking about. You look at different cultures and different cultures' connections to food, and then you go to the place that they are. So like we could be talking about like South Central LA. You literally could be anywhere, and that's the
poutine.
Part that it's the haunted poutine that we never knew we needed.
Somebody give that ghost a fucking poutine, like give it to it now.
So was it always horror for you? Did you grow up on horror? Is that how you ended up here? Was that?
Huh. Yeah. Okay. So this is quite a story, but I grew up as a child actor. Okay. Mm-hmm. So from the time I was 4 till I was 16. And I mean, the experience was fine. I mean, I was in Canada. I was all like protected. It was all fine, except for the fact that, oh my God, I've never said this out loud. My grandmother stole all my money.
Oh, shit.
But, you know, okay, that's a like side thing. Story. But horror, I think, and this is why I think I love the genre so much, and I love the people specifically that love it so much, because I think we all find a way to, in a very safe space, kind of unwrap all the things that we deal with on the inside and do it in a very overt theatrical way, depending on, you know, what subgenre you love. I think the first time I was too young to watch Rocky Horror Picture Show. I was probably 7. And I think that's where it probably started for me. It was like that. Then I saw Candyman on TV. This is when like, you know, movies would just play Yeah. And you're like, oh, I'm watching Red Shoe Diaries at 12 o'clock. You know,
like I think a whole lot of us have learned a lot from Red Shoe Diaries.
100%. I will never forget the tentacle episode for all of my life. Like, there was a lot of it that it was this intersection of the naughtiness of seeing like sex and gore and blood and darkness and it being like so available to you, where I was like, but the rest of society is not like this. Like, this is not what things are like, especially in my immigrant household where things are so protected and so bubbled. That was my outlet to, I think, the rest of the world was through that, through watching horror movies secretly, you know? Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. I remember, I like that you touched on like the sort of the getting the naughtiness of it. 'Cause the first horror movie I ever saw was Poltergeist, and I hid behind my parents' couch or our couch while they watched it, and they never knew that I was there. And I'm sure I didn't watch the whole thing. I remember some scenes very like the maggots and the meat and shit. And then the clown and everything in the trees, but like I remember running back to my room being freaked out and then being like, oh, I got away with that. That was dangerous and cool, and nobody knows, and like I was hooked there.
What about you guys, Ryan and Jonas, like what were your first like movies?
My first one was the stereotypical Exorcist one. Yeah, and that was the one. Like, I was very young. I was way too young to watch it, and it was I was at a very irresponsible extended family member's house that was like had one of those pay-per-view boxes that was just unlocked for everything. They're like, I don't give a fuck what you watch, I'm gonna go make food. Like, so I threw on like whatever was on HBO at the time, and it was gonna be a coin flip. It was either gonna be porn or horror, and it happened to be horror. So it was,
or both.
Yeah, right. It could be both. It could have been Hellraiser, you know, like we never know. But no, it was The Exorcist, and I watched it, and it fucked me up, but in the best way. Like, it was one of those things where I watched it and I was like, oh, now I'm interested in all of that. And then it sent me down the rabbit hole of like, now I have to go to my video store, and now I have to get all of the VHS tapes that I've been looking at for, you know, like with my parents as we walk through this thing. It's like, now I want to watch all that stuff. So it started early, but yeah, Exorcist was the first one.
You know, for me, like I'm just going to like, I mean, so movie wise, it was either, you know, like I was from we're from New England, but we were living in Colorado. So like The Shining was always kind of a big thing for us. 'Cause Stephen King at the time was, so The Shining was big, and An American Werewolf in London, still like my favorite movie. We owned a copy of it. But I am going to actually give the nod to Scooby-Doo. My intro to like straight up like horror as of age, to kind of realize they're a little too close with the cops. But I watched Scooby-Doo as a kid like forever, and like my mother was always into horror. She always read horror books and watched horror movies. Wow. So I just always like, I kind of, you know, and she's Eastern European and genuinely believes in old world things. She would deny it now. And if she's listening, hey, Ma, sorry to break this, but like my mom believes, I mean, she's Hungarian, and like so they believe in like curses, and she's like 100%. Actually like Romani, and so she believes in like curses and seances and speaking with the dead, you know, and all that sort of thing. So like that sort of reality always kind of like lived with me, you know. So it's horror is like, I don't know. It's just rad. You know what I mean?
Kind of always been there.
Yeah, it's just kind of always been there. Like, I mean, from Scooby to An American Werewolf in London, it's still just such a fantastic movie. You know?
Okay. I've never asked this question actually on the podcast, and I'll ask it to everybody here. When you guys were kids, did any of you ever do the Bloody Mary or Candyman game?
Oh, yeah.
Did you? Okay, cool. Oh,
yeah. I tried always so hard.
Right, right. I really tried for the Bloody Mary one. I was like, come on. Like, we've said it so many times.
Also, I tried to use the force.
So many times.
Right, right.
Yeah. He's like, she's like, don't force. Be so fucking needy, Jenny.
Right. Like, y'all kids
No,
are
I
thirsty.
Did all those things. I was like, I my mom was like, I was like, is the force real from Star Wars? And she was like, I don't know if you try hard enough. So I fucking did. For years. I would just sit in my room and be like, if I try hard enough. And I would just waste my time staring at something.
Dude, I'm gonna be pissed off if this whole time the reason that we didn't get Bloody Mary is because we simped too hard for her. Like, yes. If that's what it was. Like,
she was feeling. She was like,
It's just like leaving.
Like, you guys,
red.
You guys want it too much. I'm sorry.
Yes. Your other question, Graham, was about. I think was about whether horror was the reason like I came out here, right? Was that it? Was that the question? Like, was that?
Oh, no, but that, sure.
Sure, sure.
No, but that is a good question.
No, that is.
Is that how you?
No, but is it like, is that why did you leave Canada to go to LA with horror in mind?
Oh, absolutely not. No. Okay.
LA can be horrific. So.
So Aftertaste is actually the very first thing I've ever made, period. I've never made anything else. I've never directed anything else. I've never made a short, period. That's the first thing I've ever written.
Holy shit.
Yeah. What happened was I actually came out, my husband is a film producer as well. He worked with a really amazing director who's also a very controversial director named David Ayer. Produced a number of his movies all the way to Suicide Squad. And we met, it was filming in Toronto, we met, and I was working in sales at the time. And at that point in my life, I was like, I don't want anything to do with entertainment. I'd been an actor for so long. I don't like it. I'm tired. I'm done. But I took so many years off, and it always felt like something I wanted to come back to. Maybe, but at the time, I just wasn't ready to process it. He was like, oh, you should come. I think you'd love it. I came with the intent to like stay for a couple weeks. And instead, I stayed for a month and we got married. And I started working immediately at ICM Partners, and which RIP, it doesn't exist anymore. It's now part of CAA. And I started in TV. And then I kind of worked my way up and ended up working for the head of feature film. So I really got a sense of what I wanted and what I didn't want. And even then, I didn't know that I was going to direct. I didn't know at all. I thought I was just going to learn the business and then become a manager or an agent. Because I understood the business. That's the path that I felt like with me being in sales before, I thought that's what I was going to do. But I very, you know, after 2.5 years realized, and then having my first kid, I realized that that was not the life I wanted at all. So I actually, you know, I started producing, and I set up my first feature over at Sony. And I was like, yeah, I did it. And like many things that are good in the industry, it dies after 4.5 years. But all that frustration only led me to say like, hey, I've got good ideas. I can make this happen. I know how the business works. So why not me? And then I wrote Aftertaste a year and a half ago. Yeah.
So wow. I want to jump into this really quick, because first off, like, I want to go a little nerdy on this for a second, because when the fact that you said that this is your first thing that you've ever made, yes, blows my fucking mind, because like, seriously, like, if I didn't respect you more, I would call you a liar. Like, it's true.
Sociopath.
Right. But, like,
well, I was a child actor, so. Yeah.
Fair. So, but like, as I'm watching it, so like, I also do photography. I do live concert photography. So like, my eye, when I watch things, whether it's a film or whether I'm looking at photos or whatever, there's that technical nerdy part of me that starts paying attention to depth perception and starts paying attention to the way the shots are framed and all that shit. So as I'm watching your short, like, the way that it's filmed and the way that it's shot is gorgeous. Like, so the fact that this is your first, like, if if somebody threw the money at you to make a full feature length film of this, like, and I don't mean this just to say this because you're on our show right now, like, as far as actual like cinematography and directing talent and filming talent, like, through the roof. So it's just, yeah, like, I'm beyond impressed, especially if this is your first thing. Holy shit, man. Like, it's
I see Aftertaste as sort of like on the same level as like different. So it reminded me of kind of Peppergrass and The Menu for obvious reasons. Yes.
Right.
But it's at that level. Like, if someone was like, what are the best food horror that came out last year? I'd be like, Peppergrass, The Menu, and Aftertaste. Like, easy. Because they're all like right up there, and yours is a short, so it's, you know, nobody really got to see it.
Yeah,
but exactly. but it's up there on the same level, and that's when you said it's your first. I was like, oh fuck, that's mind blowing.
Obviously, I was a producer first, so the number one thing I would do to support my director is to make sure that that person was stacked with the right people so that they wouldn't fail. Like, that's my number one job. So in this, I did produce it as well with my team, though. But so I had Sean Patrick Kelly of Alias Films literally called me a couple days after I was like, at this point, hadn't even written it. I just had an idea. And he was like, what are you working on? How can I support you? His company's rad. He does a lot of like work in the commercial space, but then he's actually EP'd a lot of shows for Hulu that lifts up BIPOC voices. And that was one thing that, you know, through the fabric of who he is as an awesome, rad person, was just like, what are you doing and how can I help you? So that was it. That was like, the financing was there. He has incredible connections. I told him what I wanted it to feel like was something akin to like the Safdie brothers meets like Chef's Table. So like very uncut gems. I wanted to have little, like a little bit of planning, but not be married to all the planning that I would do, hence the Safdie brothers. But of course, that's fucking hard. They have a lifetime of experience working with each other. And me, I was like, I want to work with that a cinematographer that's worked with them or worked, you know, within this world. But you know, that person who's actually in New York, in Brooklyn, his name is Zeus Morand. Zeus was a camera operator on The Wrestler. He worked on Uncut Gems as well as a camera operator. So he knew exactly what I meant when I said I wanted to do this. I wanted to come on and just be inspired by the moments instead of racking my head around like, oh, like I'm going to storyboard this. And trust me, I did it all. I storyboarded. I did a floor plan. I did all this fucking shit that I didn't actually end up doing. But I needed to because, A, I've never been to film school and I've never actually done this job before. Sure. And I'm like coming in here trying to be this confident director. And also, you know, thinking of the fact that I want people to respect me, but I'm also kind of like a short, cute little Asian girl. But I don't want to be perceived that way. So I did my homework as much as I possibly could. And it wouldn't have been possible. Like, what you see is a very much a collective experience. Certainly no director is like the head of it all, but I think it's very important to have very good communication and trust into the people that you know, and know how to talk to them in like sub level ways. So that's the relationship we had to create so fast, because I only Zoomed with him like 3 times, and then we showed up that day and we're like, let's go, let's make this thing.
Was it shot all in one day?
2 days.
Wow. Holy shit.
We had 2 days, and they were like, Christiane, this is crazy. So you know how difficult it is to get proper specialty shots of food, and all the naivety of also me not doing this was lofty. But you know what? We got pretty much everything that we wanted out of it. I've certainly learned a lot. I would have done more. I wish I could have done more. I wish I could have afforded another day so I could have ended the way that I wanted to end it. But at the same time, the point was to just do a banger of a stylish, bold, piece that was short enough that could just get programmed like this in a bunch of places, which it has, you know, Motel X in Lisbon to Brooklyn Horror to Screamfest in LA, and it has. But I know people's frustration as well, because I have it myself, where it's like, but it wasn't like, it didn't feel like it was complete. And I was like, yeah, well then fucking give me money and I'll go.
I'll make the whole thing.
I'll make it 4 hours long if you.
Yeah, you will. Yeah, I'll make it like 8 hours.
I'll do the Snyder cut of.
So I want to mention this really quick too, because there's something that kind of ties into the concept of the food. Like when you look at the food in the movie, it's obviously, like you said, you did your homework on it. You had somebody come in that shows all that. And in the same way with food, where they say that we taste with our eyes first, mm-hmm. I feel like with horror, we see with our hearing first. We see with our ears first. So like when you have a film and the sound production is done well,
yeah.
Even if there is nothing on screen, if yeah. the sound is there, you can see what's happening, or what, like, you know, your brain makes a visual of what you think is about to come. And the way that you did the sound on this one, especially because I watched it with headphones, I watched it with good headphones, you know,
and it's gone.
Dude, I'm one of those people that, like, when I go to the theaters and stuff, there's sometimes I'll go to, like, you know, I'll totally be the film snob that goes to a cinema house and has like that experience for sure. But if I'm going to see a movie that I know is going to have just banger sound production, I yeah. go to the most premium screen I possibly can. I sit right in the middle. I'm like, I want all the sound to hit me in the right place, because I'm an asshole like that. I'm just like, I'm like, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to fucking do it. Like, you know, so when I'm watching this, the sound production on it was so well done. Everything from the ghost to the sounds in the kitchen to the footsteps to the sounds in the alleyway, like when she's coming back, like just there, everything on it, the sound production on it added so much to it. Like, yeah. So I don't know whose responsibility that was,
that's my editor, and who's a fantastic director. I mean, like, he's not an editor. Chris Ewing and his wife Callie are my very, 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 very dear friends, that they're like family. But Chris is worked at Hulu for a number of years, and then, you know, they recently left. Chris and Callie are on their own amazing path, you know, getting their own accolades, but he did me a huge, huge favor by editing this thing with me, and he laid down the first tracks of what the sound design would be, because he's that type of editor that needs the sonic cues. Mm-hmm. And then we took that and we sent it off to Jeff. I don't even know how to say his last name, S-E-E-L-Y-E, Seely. but Jeff was, you know, a person that works with Ty West, and he buttoned up things. And again, this is not me being a great director. This is me being a great producer, sure. of like finding the people that I knew could deliver the things that I needed to deliver, because those, again, the goals were so lofty, and me know nothing. those two people are really key. And I can't forget Emily Green. Incredible. She was a voice on Station 11 for HBO, Beast of the Southern Wild. Like, she's just an epic solo artist, and she and John Zarcone worked together to create a score that we would actually pull stems from. And I was like, why can't we just, you know, let's pull that violin sound. They spend all this time creating this music. Let's actually pull these things and put it into our sound design as well. So we're able to kind of cross over. I'm a classically trained singer, musician. So mm-hmm. that informs a lot of, like, I'm a sound person. And yeah, it's just.
That tracks now.
Yeah. Makes all the sense.
I talk a lot about Ty West's sound editing and everything and all that, and it's really good. So yeah, it doesn't surprise me that you worked with somebody that's worked with him. So
that's one of the things that made House of the Devil so effective. was the sound, like, because especially with that movie, because it was a micro budget for a feature film, and the sound production on that film made the movie exponentially more terrifying. So, like, it's sound can do a lot. And also, when it just, like, this, like I said, the sound in yours propped it up. Like, it was, the movie was dope as it was, but then the sound design added to it, like, it added a whole new layer of, like, the tension and a layer of the fear and a layer of, the, you know, like, all these things. So,
as it should. There was a version of it that was like 15 minutes. And then I was like, you know what? Fucking cut it. Just get it short. Like, I always wanted to be like, just get it out there, show the thing, let people be like, oh, what did I see? And then, like, cut it off like that. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And that's all I wanted to do. That was, like, sort of the feeling that we're going for. We just kept getting the pace faster and faster. We probably cut it about, you know, 5 times before I was like, it's done. I'm like a very instinctual person. I'm not a perfectionist by any means. I've never been that way. I'm a gut driven type of person, and I am a gut driven director through and through. I also, like, I mean, I can't going through years as an actor, and then I went to school for drama in university. I studied drama. So, like, that part of it is the thing that I pride myself the most of, is my ability to direct actors as an actor.
That's great. I'm so excited to see the shit that you do in the future.
So where are people watching Aftertaste right now?
Where are people watching? They're, you know, let's see. We've got Salem Horror Fest. Okay, so that's exciting. It's in April. Yeah, that'll be the next one. Then I guess the one after that I can't talk about yet because it's not released. But, you know, we're doing that festival circuit, and we're keeping it offline. Cool. And if you're a good friend or family, I'll send it to you, of course.
I have a film festival question for a short film festival. I don't know if you've been a part of it yet or not, because if you haven't, then we'll talk after the show. But it's called the Chain Film Festival in New York.
No, I have not. Sweet. Is that coming up?
I believe it's coming up in the summer. I want to say it's coming up in the summer, but we can definitely talk after the show on that, because I've worked with a couple of people that are filmmakers that have done shorts, and so I've ended up getting a relationship with them, like, through that, because I've kind of been like, it's people that don't live in New York that had their film go on it, so they're like, hey, can you go represent the film and just, like, take pictures and shit? I'm like, fuck yeah, I can. So, you know. Yeah, so I've met these people a million times now. They're awesome. So I was just curious about that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, horror fests are they're so much fun, because you're really with such a warm audience that's expecting the worst and acting like everything's the best.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. You know, there's so much less pressure when you're at you know, another festival, you're doing something that's like, oh, it's like a heavy drama or whatever, and you're like biting your nails, but you could literally just throw blood at the screen for like an hour and people are like, that fucking rule.
I've never seen
it. Probably did.
Yeah.
I would have loved it.
I've never seen
a Skinamarink fan, so.
Dude, I've literally never seen a crazier film premiere than the NYC premiere for Terrifier 2. Like, people lost their fucking mind. Like, literally the first kill, everybody was like standing up, throwing shit at the screen and screaming. They're like, ah, it was fucking wild.
My other actress, Sydney Malakay, she's actually in a film that's coming out soon, a feature, and it's by the same team as the Terrifier team. So it's,
oh shit, nice.
Yeah, that's going to be fun too. You know, I need to talk about Jared for a second, because our chef.
Yeah.
Our main asshole chef, who is
the one that could give Gordon Ramsay a run for his fucking money.
Yeah. So, man, if you want to talk about a guy you need to get on this show, you need to get Jared on this show. You guys will love him. Jared went to, like, clown school. He's like a super hustler. He worked, he was just like, oh, one day he was working as a touring musician. And then he was like, and obviously in like a rock, like a metal band. And he's like, oh, I think I want to cook. And then he just like shifts into that. But he starts cooking obviously he was just chopping and prepping and staging, but he was doing it at a really high level. Like he was working for Jose Andres, and then he was working with like the team that opened up Animal in LA. He just kept going up and up and up into all these amazing restaurants and Michelin star kitchens until he was just like, I'm going to open my own restaurant. He goes to his restaurant, opens this place up, and he literally nearly dies. That's not the figurative, like, oh, I'm so tired. He almost died. And it got him to realize that he wanted to be an actor again, and came back to that world. The man is just, you know, he's a jackknife, and he's incredible, and, you know, brought so much to that role, because it was supposed to be a role of a guy that, you know, is an aging chef who, you know, you guys know mm-hmm. who that guy is.
Oh, yeah.
when you're feeling like your ego is just like, fuck, like everyone's younger than me and everybody's better than me now, but I got to act out. I got a small dick, but I'm going to act big. So that's who this man was. And that, I think, really spoke to Jared. He gets to do, you know, sometimes he has to do like Hallmark movies, which doesn't mean anything to him. Yeah. And then he finally sees this thing on, like, I don't even know where it was, like casting.com or whatever the fuck. And he finally was like, wow, like I get to do something that I love. And that's really special. All the actors in this are incredibly special people. Yeah. From Isabel to Sydney to Jared to Maurice to Eduardo, they each have so much to bring to this world. As soon as I saw their pictures and as soon as I saw their audition tapes just one time, I hired them immediately. It was just obvious.
That's all. Yeah, you clearly have like the skill of like putting together the right people for a project.
Well, it actually wasn't Isabel first. It was actually Kristen Kish. You guys know Kristen from Top Chef?
Oh yeah.
So it was actually Kristen Kish was actually the first Kai, but something that I noticed, I mean, like there was timing, it was COVID, there was a lot of factors that you know ultimately didn't work out, but we had a few sessions and something about that woman, she is a beast, and she can't remember what it was like, I think, to have to suffer as a, like, because she's literally that talented that she never had a point in time where she was like having to really figure it out, if that makes sense, which is like, sure. Oh, I'm jealous. Yeah. But our character needed to feel out of water. And that's why it actually made sense to go with someone who wasn't a professional chef for this. Because yeah. They're little fucking doe eyes, gorgeous hazel little doe eyes. We're so well on screen.
Yeah.
How do you feel about tackling our Sinister
Six? Sinister Six.
Yes, I don't even know what that is, but let's go.
All right.
I have a feeling you're gonna have some fucking great answers for these ones.
Okay. Yeah, I think you might. Yeah, so it's six horror questions, okay. And you can, you know, explain your answer or pass if you want. So the first one is Freddy or Jason?
Fred, whoa. Freddy. Do I have to say? Do I say why or no?
You can.
You can.
Yeah, totally. If you want.
So, I think it's the costume. Honestly, I think it's like sweater. A very superficial answer.
Yeah.
No, that's okay. Great. I picked Jason because of the mask. I just think that mask is rad.
Yeah,
so.
He's got a more minimalistic like look.
The Freddy's sweater is fucking great. Yeah, you're right.
Rad. I have a thing for like. Yeah, there was a point where I was wondering if Aftertaste should even have a character, like a ghost that you should see or not. But then I was like, fuck, I want to see them. I just want to. And maybe next time, maybe they'll be gone. You know, maybe I'll never show them ever again. But yeah, love a good character.
Awesome.
I think the only person that doesn't like Freddy's sweater is Kelly Rowland. I think she's the only one out of the entire horror genre. And she was the only one that didn't like it.
What's the difference between thriller and horror?
Oh, yeah. Okay. They both act on feeling. Like, they both are, I think, about making a certain pace that creates that tension and that push and the pull. But then horror, I think, has an ability to get into, like, you know, slasher, thriller, supernatural. There is like an element that almost every horror is a thriller, but not every thriller is a horror. You know, it's like the square and the rectangle. So I feel like the difference is in the touches of like what you do with that thriller that takes it over the edge, whether it's dead alive, fucking eating like gory shit and like, you know, that like high intensity, but there's theatrics that a thriller doesn't have to have that a horror has to have, or it doesn't work.
Right.
I love that. I like it. That's a great answer.
Yeah. It's kind of like what my thing has always been, like, thriller can deal with bad, but horror has to deal with evil. And it's kind of like what you're saying. Like, it's like, it's just like the extremeness, you know what I mean? So
pushing the edge. Totally. Yeah,
exactly.
What horror movie influenced your taste the most?
Whoa. Okay. That's, you know, that's such a heavy one. Cause it's so many, but I literally just mentioned Dead Alive, and I feel like it is that.
Nice.
I think it was the first time that to see something that was like so freaking out there. And I mean, I'm sure everybody who listens to this podcast has seen Dead Alive, but Peter Jackson doing horror movies is the best. You're like, it really is. Angles and the drama and the like, if you think it's not enough, it's not enough for Peter Jackson. So I think that is a huge factor to me. But thriller wise, I mean, a part of me goes to that, you know, the schlock too. Like, I love the schlock and the Fringe and the slashers and Saw and all that. But I also really, 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 really love thrillers that are like Requiem for a Dream. Darren Aronofsky is still one of my absolute favorite directors of all time. Like, I love Black Swan. I think you can see that in my work. Like, I hope you can see that in my work. But that's, it goes both ways. It's all of that.
Love it.
I love it. If you could erase one movie from existence, what would it be? And it doesn't have to be horror.
Whoa, that's such a rude question.
It's our most passed on question.
Yeah.
Generally, filmmakers don't like to
have a hard time.
Have a hard time doing it, but that's the way we like.
Occasionally, we'll get a filmmaker that's just like, you know what? Fuck this movie in particular. Like, very rare, but it happens.
Yeah, I don't think I can.
That's fair. Totally fair.
I have that in my head, but
that's fair. That's totally fair. Cool.
All right, are ghosts real?
Yes.
This was the loaded one.
Loaded question. This is like, we needed a part two for this one. Okay, yes, absolutely. I will never push my beliefs on anybody else ever. It is not my job. I've learned that through the years. It is not my job to convince people. But I'll say this much. My family doesn't even know. My father, my stepmother, my mother does, but like most of my family doesn't know what I've been through when it comes to supernatural experiences, because I protect that part of me. You know, when I was like 26, I took myself to a psychiatrist because I had to ask her if I was schizophrenic. And I think this is very common for a lot of people who deal with supernatural things. Because so much of it is the same. You see so many horror movies that talk about this idea of trusting your narrator. Like, are they just mentally ill? or is it really happening? And the reason why she gave me of like, you're not schizophrenic. I can't say for a fact that you are you know, susceptible to ghosts or whatever, but she's like, I do believe that people are sensitive to ghosts. And it just, you know, the process of figuring that out was I needed to tell her like three or four different anecdotes of times that I've experienced ghosts. And she said the reason why I wasn't lying was, or not that I wasn't lying, she's like, you could be lying, but you were telling stories logically. And that was the reason why I wasn't schizophrenic. I've seen anything from actual physical, you know, ghosts as in apparitions. I have experienced the ability to help people whose family members are crossing over to get them to the hospital in time before their family member dies. That has happened too. I have, you know, talked to a lot of, it's just so weird, but you know, I've been possessed once, twice.
Twice.
Yes. And you know, it's my best friend's grandmother who I never met, never knew, never saw a picture of. And you know, somehow I know all of this information about this person. So I mean, I have lots of different little stories over the years. Sometimes I see nothing for years. Sometimes I'll go through absolutely a phase of nothing. And then sometimes it's like so overwhelming. It's like, I literally will see orbs all around, or like, it happened, you know, when I had a normal job, I had a manager and I'm sitting there in the middle of the day and I see three blue orbs in the shape of a triangle and they're just circling. Like, it's circling around her. And she's like, so you have all those numbers? And I'm like, no. yeah. So, I have a hard time talking about it. It's a different, it's a difficult thing because so many people in my life don't know that I go through this.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing. That's crazy. And it's awesome. I think it's really cool. I fully believe in that kind of stuff, honestly. And it's never happened to me, but like, there's stuff that I can't explain that I can feel and stuff. And it's weird. So like, that's really an awesome look into that.
You know, it's not weird. I do believe that many of us are conditioned out of our own supernatural connection as children. We're so conditioned out of it. As soon as your mom told you that the monsters in your bed were not real, as soon as your parents started telling you not to trust the things that you were telling them, that's when you started to shut down. So I do believe that you can open those things very much back up again. And just like any form of magic, which is, you know, religion, prayer, witchcraft, it's all the fucking same. It's all the belief and allowing your energy to manifest itself so much. Like, that is what magic is. So if you're able to kind of, you know, put yourself out in a sense that like you are like a porcupine full of like lots of different spikes of energy out into the ether, and that's your aura in essence. If you're able to find ways to kind of focus all that energy towards what it is that you're trying to achieve, whether it's connecting to the other side or whether it's trying to manifest something for yourself, a goal, or to just, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, it's all the same. It's all about just controlling your energy and shifting it forward.
I want to be awesome. I want to be possessed, so I have somebody just to chat with.
Oh my god! You don't want it. You guys done drugs? Isn't that a funny question?
I just want to be possessed, so like we can like we can chat about shit. You know what I mean?
Just hang out. I don't think that's how possession works, Ryan.
you really want to know what it's like, because it's fucking weird. I'll tell you that much. But have you ever done Molly?
Yes.
I've done ecstasy. That's early Molly, right?
When you do that drug, there is a sense that like everything is, there's a sense of brightness. All of a sudden, there's that point where your whatever synapses are like, everything is magic, and opens up and whatever. That's what possession is. It starts that way. It feels like I was sober both times. Sober, stone cold. I'm sitting there I'll tell you the one about my best friend's grandma. I'm sitting with her on a couch. She's in a little condo and there's a sliding glass door, and I'm staring at the glass door and just something kind of catches my attention, which is that there's an old lady standing beside my best friend. And I'm like, what in the fuck? are you? And I just remember all of a sudden everything going hella bright. Like I was like, wow, like it's just everything was exaggerating. All the colors were just phenomenal. And then I just started getting a rush of images. I got, I won't share exactly what it is because it's very personal, but I just got a rush of images and text about a very specific situation that her grandmother, mother, and herself, like that, they kind of all dealt with. That of course, there's no freaking way I would know. I saw her at her kitchen. I saw her like looking at me, you know, my mind started going into like a movie. And I just remember feeling really heavy, like my body changed. And I remember feeling like the feelings I was experiencing weren't mine. That's the best way that I can describe it. And then I could feel tears coming down, but it felt like they weren't mine again. So a lot of like physical sensation, like audio was like as if it was nothing there. It was like there was nothing there at all. And then I just snapped out of it and I looked down at my friend and she was fucking like, what the fuck? Like typing away. And I was like, how long was I out? Like, what happened? Like, what's going on? And she was just like, it's been like 10 minutes. And I thought it was maybe 20 seconds. Okay. The whole experience, it was like DMT. Like it felt like it was 20 seconds, but
I was going to say this feels very DMT. Like
it is. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. I actually have never done DMT, but I've read a lot about what people experience. And I was like, that's what it was to be possessed. It was that.
You know, this is interesting too, and I'm going to bring this up, just a very brief thing about this. Anybody that's listened to the show, that's seen me post on like, you know, social media and stuff, knows that my fiance passed away on January 10th. And one of my friends, I shit you not, when I was in LA for like the memorial shit, one of my friends, my best friend, Penelope, starts texting me and she was like, I'm sorry if this is too much for you to take in right now, but I have to unload this. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And she started telling me shit that there is no chance that she would have known, because she'd never met my fiance ever. She'd never met her. She knew only what I told her about her, like which was very minimal stuff. Like she didn't know anything about her personality aside from the fact that she was a comic and stuff like that. But she started texting me shit that was like, this is stuff that you need to know. And I was like, get the fuck out of here. Like I had to put my phone down. I was like, send me all the shit that you need to send me, like to get this out, like out or whatever. I was like, but I got to put my phone down, like straight up. I got to walk away. So I put my phone down for like an hour and I went into my friend's room and I was like pacing and I was like, you know, like going through it, you know. And I come back and I pick up my phone and I see all the stuff that she sent me. I was like, all right, if I didn't believe in spiritual stuff before, I 100% do now. And she's always somebody that told me that she had been susceptible to stuff like that with people that had passed away. Like it happens to her, not regularly, but it happens occasionally. And when it does, it's usually somebody that's not close to her, but it's somebody who is close to her that it happens to. Yeah. So that's what you just said is fucking wild. Like it's wild only because I literally just went through this with my fiance. That's
I'm glad you found that because it's really hard for people when they're going through death to I think we very quickly exchanged this, but my true feelings of it after 34 years of these experiences is that we just shift into like a different dimension and you know it's not our bodies, our bodies are gone, but like our existence and our life, we leave records throughout existence. Everything that you do, everywhere you've been, everything you're about, you leave records like a library, and that's what we are. So death is a word we made up.
Yeah, it's fair.
I love it.
Yeah, they gave me fucking goosebumps, dude. Like,
I'm sure it did. It's a wild experience to share that stuff with people. You know, it's really hard, and you don't know how someone's gonna take it. So, like I said, I won't do it to freak people out. It's not that, but her sense of what she texted you of, I have to share this with you. It's because if you don't, we physically like get sick.
Yeah, that's what she said. She said it's physically overwhelming is what she said.
Yeah, because the people care so much about you that like they'll do anything to like make sure that you know what's up. And sometimes that's hard because, again, if the person on the receiving end is not ready for a message, then it feels like, well, I tried my best. Like, I'm sorry.
Right.
You know, but you know, luckily that hasn't. The only person that has ever been a little uncomfortable with the things that have happened is my mother-in-law. But, you know, actually it's been 8 years now and she's worked through a lot of the like feelings, I think, of the stuff that's happened, messages that I've sent. So, I don't really wish this on anyone. You know, the gift is a fucking curse. It's a kind of a personal
thing. Feels like that line has a little more weight now.
Yeah.
It really does. It's a tiring kind of existence, but the good thing is that I think that I can kind of turn it off for a while when I don't want it. So, yeah.
So that's a yes.
Yeah, we're gonna go ahead and say it's a yes.
that's a yes. To our ghost reel.
Yeah,
that's the best yes of all time.
Yeah, yes.
Easily. Midsummer or Hereditary?
Hereditary, easily.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I could have seen that given our conversation. I could have seen that leaning into Hereditary.
I read that Ari's was a client of ICM. So I read that script way before it was even packaged. I think there's a few people whose writing really specifically informs me in horror. Mike Flanagan is number one, I think, in the style of writing, not necessarily what you make, but the how you write it. Mike Flanagan kind of speaks to me the most. And then I think Ari Aster also is way up there for me.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you
fucking killed it.
Yeah, you slayed the
six is my favorite number. It's my birthday, March 6th. So, you know,
awesome.
Had to represent. But I really only truly did five.
What other questions? No, yeah. I mean, no, the one for that one is almost a trick question. Like, it's, yeah, you know, like it almost
is a moral question.
Yeah, right. Pass is a total answer. Like, yeah, that 100%. I wouldn't. That works.
Wait, would you guys answer that question?
Yeah, I said, Scream. Right.
Fuck yeah.
I said, Scream, but I love Scream. I just said it for like to see what the chaos theory, like Scream, I think, changed horror. Like, it was a game changer in a lot of ways in how it's perceived and how it's made and put out and everything. But it just re-jumped everything. So I'd like to see what would have happened without that.
Oh, see, that was a really good interpretation of an answer because you're like, you're killing your baby. Like, you're killing something you love.
Right.
Just to see what would happen, though. So it's not a great idea.
Right.
I chose either of the Rob Zombie Halloween movies just because they were both not needed, not good, and he tries to shut down skate parks. So
yeah, fuck that guy.
So
fucking sucks. Mine was very film nerdy because I was like, I said, get rid of I Spit on Your Grave because it's an unnecessary movie that the genre that it quote unquote created can completely exist without. Yeah. And that movie itself is so grotesquely exploitative that it never needed to be made. Like, you can have every single good rape revenge movie that's ever been made without the existence of I Spit on Your Grave ever being into the ether. And it's a purely mean-spirited movie to me that I just don't think ever needed to be made.
Yeah. A good old rape revenge, a light little rape revenge.
a little light one. I mean, like, I've seen some that are legitimately phenomenal movies, like the movie Revenge.
Revenge literally was about to say
Revenge. Yeah. Incredible.
So good.
Well, yeah. But it was it was made by a woman who was able to like, so wasn't the glorification. It just showed it as the gross, disgusting, ridiculously cowardice act that it is, as opposed to like 75% of this movie being like glorification of assault, which is like, you know, there's a fine line in there between like, okay, yeah, these guys are bad and they're all going to get it. But how much of, how much suffering did we like, I don't know. So I would
did rather, you have to, yeah. How much yeah, did you have I would to rather, put on screen?
Like, if they're going to show any of that, like, in Revenge, but, like, and then the third act of Revenge, they had to get more blood because they were out of blood.
Right. That was my favorite part of, like, her talking about making that movie. She's like, we literally ran out of blood because we fucked this guy up so bad. I was like, I love it. It was so good.
Yeah.
So, like, literally, the two best movies out of that entire genre, out of that entire subgenre, the two best movies out of those were both directed by women. It was that one and The Nightingale. The Nightingale is by Jennifer Kent. So it's like...
so good.
Yeah. Like, and The Nightingale was fucking amazing. But like that first 30 minutes, whew. But after that, it's like, you know, talk about cathartic. Like, it's, you know, it's just the way that it's made. But yeah, that's why I was like, I spit on your grave. Just that can go away. Doesn't ever need to be made.
You know, you bring up such a good point, which kind of like, you know, I just feel like one of the reasons why I love horror so much specifically is it's such an inclusive part of the entertainment industry. There's no other genre in entertainment that will allow emerging directors and emerging actors to actually and throw money at a genre, because it is a concept that you sell and it is not based on a star, which I think is a big distinguisher between when you're packaging something in the comedy space versus, you know, dramas or like, you know, all these different genres of film that actually get made, that get money towards them. It's the best place for so many people to actually start. Now, of course, if you don't love making horror movies, yeah, like that will become apparent very quickly. And those people will phase out, but, you know, at least they got a movie made. But, you know, it is such an inclusive space. I think that you see, you know, Karin Kusama, Jennifer Kent, Anna Lily Amapour, like Anna Biller, like you, Lee Janiak, like there's so many women in the space, in a world where we talk a lot about how little, how few women are directors. Yeah, but if you go into the horror space, you have them in spades, like with like, and with talent, Julia Ducournau, like there's so many incredible people to look up to in the horror genre space. And I feel like it should be that standard for everything else in this industry, but it's not, and that's okay, and that's what makes one of the things that makes horror so special.
Kusama is one of my favorite directors, just in general. From Jennifer's Body to The Invitation. And fucking Yellow Jackets. Holy shit.
Oh, like, yeah, that's a career that I definitely want. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And shout out to Chantel Han, too, also a friend of
the show. Yeah.
Canadian as well. And she
Peppergrass.
She did Peppergrass, and she's such an ass kicker too, and such a like really one of the best people that we've met. So many great people along us, and it's just so cool to have met her. And but yeah, it's you know, like, and for like a long time, like there was like this sort of like, oh well, women, you know, aren't, you know, like there was like this sort of like old boy network of like, well, are women going to do horror and can they do it? And then you look at movies like American Psycho. I mean, we can argue that's horror or not, but it's brilliant. And it's like, you know, and it's just like, you know, it's like, it's so ridiculous that it's still like, even like a conversation and like that, like we still have to talk about this, that we still have to say these things, because it's just like, I mean, like what in art, like in all things, but particularly in art, like all things should be even. Like art needs to be brought to the table by all the artistic minds and never shut down. And like, and it's just disappointing that it's like
all the voices. We need all the voices.
All the voices. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the most disenfranchised people are probably the best at making horror. Absolutely. Totally. Yeah, hands down.
Yeah.
And I think it's fucking stupid if anybody ever thinks that, like, oh, can women do horror movies? It's like, I bleed every month for a week. Never fucking pulled a cup out of your vagina and looked at, like, how much blood comes out of you, because I fought for 34 years. I didn't start when I was a baby. But I mean, you know, especially like going through birth, like my fucking insides were out of my stomach. Like I got a C-section, you know, I pulled a baby out of me. Like, it is an absurd thing for me to think that anybody is still like, are you strong enough to do it?
Yeah.
Whatever. Do be 13 and a woman. And that'll tell you everything about, you know, life.
Families I take care of, the moms are the actual beasts. The dads are right. Like, they're like, hey, we're okay.
Asses. I've made jokes about this when I talk about like my mom, because I was like, the joke essentially is that I've been fat since birth, because I came out of my mom over 11 pounds. And I was like, yeah, exactly. And I was like, she did that shit natural, dude. I was like, she fucking did. Yeah. I was like, and then like, she's had like 6 back surgeries since then. And I'm pretty sure that I was responsible for the first one. Like,
yeah, because your ribs and your entire body has to literally open. Like,
yeah.
Like, yeah, it's like Sauron is like puts the thing down and then your body's like open now and everything comes out. You're like, ah, it's crazy. Yeah.
Like put most of that stuff back in. Like
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then just like have a flat stomach again in 2 seconds.
Sure. You know, society, like, oh my God, what's that? You need to flatten that up. Like
yeah. bitch. Yeah. Well, this is so fun, you guys.
Thank you.
We got recommendations as last to go. And that's it. I'm gonna start.
I'm having a blast. We can keep.
Yeah, going. you guys start.
Believe me, we're gonna end up having a part two of this. I guarantee fucking to you. Yeah, even exactly. If it's just to talk about supernatural shit.
I was about to say I would definitely suggest that, because I think that there's a really fun story that I can tell in like a longer length.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
That I think you guys will really like.
Hell yeah!
Well, we're huge fans, and so you can come back all the time if you want.
Yeah.
My recommendations this week, though, is I'm gonna start with Swarm. I watched all of Swarm. I don't know when Swarm came out, but I just think, you know,
pretty recently.
Yeah. But I just watched it all, and I don't know, like Donald Glover just you know, like such a massive fan of Atlanta, like just in its originality and the way it's written, and it's funny and it's serious and it's original. It's like it is such a nuanced look at things, and he was able to like kind of carry that same like Atlanta vibe into Swarm, and you know, like just the being about like you know, spoiler alert, a serial killer, and you know, and just made it, but like a serial killer that you 100% root for, and like and was just such a the acting and the directing and the it was just like one of those things that you just I don't know, blew my mind. I thought it was just absolutely fantastic. So
yeah, Swarm's dope.
I think it's on Amazon.
Movie
wise, I am going to suggest Leave. It's on Shudder.
Yes, watched it last night.
Yeah, Leave is very good. The name has a couple different meanings, and it's very good. It takes place in Sweden, I think. One of those countries.
And it's Norway, right?
Or is it Norway? Yeah, it's Norway.
I think it's
Norway. Sorry to our Swedish and Norway. Finland. That movie is also really good. Book wise, I am going to suggest Brother by Ania. What is her last name? I'm sorry, Ania. It is a good horror book. I just finished it. Ania Alborn and it's she did a great job. It's kind of it's a horror book about a serial killer family that lives in a barn in the Appalachians, and you think that could be like a little boring or like maybe a little overdone, and it's not. This one's fully grounded in a sort of reality, and it is not nice at times. It is check your trigger warnings before it, but it's an absolutely fabulous book. So those are going to be my suggestions.
Fuck yeah.
And Chief Keef. Always listen to Chief Keef. Anyways.
Definitely nothing wrong with that. All right. So I got a couple. For movie, I actually want to recommend a throwback, because somebody told me that Meryl Streep had never been in a horror movie, and that pissed me off because she's in a very good horror movie, and that's Death Becomes Her.
Yeah,
oh, I love that fucking movie.
Yeah, so the like, best. Yeah, throwback.
Goldie Hawn is one of my favorites too.
Yeah, yeah, dude, fucking revisit Death Becomes Her. It rules.
Please, like,
it's such a good movie. And also on Hulu, the Boston Strangler movie with Keira Knightley. It's actually really good. I was kind of shocked. I didn't think it was gonna be that great, and it actually was really solid. And I think it came out, I want to say like less than a month ago, so it hasn't been out that long, but it's on Hulu. Highly recommend that. Music, I don't have anything to recommend, because the one that I was gonna recommend, I think Graham's probably going to, because he sent it to me, but it fucking rules.
You could just recommend Chief Keef again.
We could, yeah. I'll just recommend Chief Keef again. I'll totally recommend Chief Keef again. So physical media recommendations on this, because I just got them in. This one, okay, so we were talking about thriller and horror. Two of the things that I'm recommending for the physical media, one is a thriller, one is a horror. The first one is a thriller, and I think that in the last 20 years, this is one of the two best thrillers, straight up, that have hit movies. The first one is The Gift. That one I think is probably one of the best thrillers, just pure thrillers. But this one, Red Eye.
Oh yeah.
So Red Eye, if you're not familiar with it, is the Cillian Murphy and Rachel McAdams Wes Craven movie that a lot of people forget Wes Craven did, because it's not a horror movie. It's a straight up thriller. Very Hitchcockian. Both Rachel McAdams and Cillian Murphy do incredible work in it. The reason I'm recommending the physical media of that one is because it never, ever hit Blu-ray, ever. It never hit Blu-ray in all the time it was out. And then Paramount Presents did a really cool 4K restoration that is beautiful. Nice. Yeah. And it's like, it's inexpensive for a 4K too. It's like $25, $26 or something like that. And then also another 4K, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The original, the OG, hit 4K.
Never heard of it.
Never. No. It's a new one on the scene.
It's one of the 10 movies I say is my favorite horror movie.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. So here's the thing. If you've ever seen this little underseen gem, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know that it looks like it was filmed through a potato. Here's the thing. The 4K restoration and transfer of it does so fucking well, because it still has the grain, it still has the grit, it still has everything that you love from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but it is done in a way that it almost looks more realistic. So the transfer is incredible, especially for transferring a movie like that to a 4K restoration. So cannot recommend that one enough. If you're into doing 4K,
I bet you can smell the dinner scene.
Dude, it's kind of like that. Like, it's straight up like the stuff, like you can fucking feel what you're watching. And
it sounds almost too much.
It's great. Like, it's really great. So
that sounds fantastic.
Yeah. It's, if you're a physical media person, those two are ones that I can't recommend enough. And yeah, that's what I got for my recommendations.
I thought you were going to say that it actually was filmed through a potato.
It kind of feels like it was.
It was. And just so it really was. They used potato skin.
Yeah. It was. It was just, they thinned it out. It was actually like a Lay's potato chip. They just
came out. Yeah. I'm like, you know how they used to put the like Dior stockings on the like, you know, the stockings?
Yeah. McCabe and Mrs. Miller was filmed through a stocking.
Yeah, but there's a potato, because, you know.
Okay. All right, I've got a few. Real quick, it's like from 2015, Take Shelter with Michael Shannon. It's about a guy that builds a shelter in his backyard, and that's it. That's the whole fucking movie, and it's fucking amazing. Like, Michael Shannon is insanely just, I'm drawn to everything he does.
Michael Shannon read a shitty sorority letter and made it amazing.
Like, he's incredible.
He literally did.
Music, I got Co-Defendants. It's That's called This Is Crime Wave. And I didn't realize it's one dude from Get Dead, the band Get Dead, and this rapper musician Cheshi. And it's, I didn't realize this until like after four listens. It's Fat Mike too. He's like the third player in it.
It's so good.
It's so fucking good. It's literally like every genre. It opens with ska. It's got flamenco. It's got hardcore and punk. It's got electronic. It's so fucking good. There's rap. DOC's on there. Incredible stuff.
One of my friends, by the way, asked me what the energy of that album was, and I was like, "Well, one of the songs is called Suicide by Pigs," and he was like, "Oh, yeah. All right." He was like, "I know where we're at." Okay,
it's really great, Ryan. I think you would absolutely fucking love it.
But... real easy listen. It's just it's very light.
I'll probably check it out at some point.
Ryan's a hard sell on music.
Ryan will fucking love this album once he listens to it.
He will.
It's gonna be your fucking war anthem. And then my last one,
and I'm only recommending this really because everybody, I just heard people shit on it, but I fucking thought Knock at the Cabin was incredible.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay. I loved every fucking second of it. I think Batista is amazing. It's a career changing performance from Batista. He's incredible, and it's just, I just love that fucking the vibe, and I thought it was a fucking perfect movie. It's one of my favorite M. Night movies already. Like, I hadn't.
Really?
Yeah, I've been real big on, since The Visit, he's been kind of killing it. And Servant, I'm two episodes away from finishing season four, which is Servant so rules. Fucking good. I cannot believe that. But yeah, and Rupert Grint going over to Knock at the Cabin was fucking, like, just, it was awesome. And I love the concept, everything about it. So
also, Christiane, you know that thing I said about the sound?
Yeah,
the sound in Knock at the Cabin is fucking incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
It is so well done.
Do I get to do some recommendations?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
you get to take us out.
We insist.
Okay. So we'll go with sound first. So I just discovered I like to spend time on like social media doom scrolling, but then also find productive ways to like be inspired by people. And there's this one person who is currently not a horror composer who I believe has to be. Okay. Ooh. She's Indigenous. She's trans, two-spirit, Canadian. Her name is Melody McIver, McIver. Melody is literally from, you know, a tribe in Indigenous, in like, I believe she's Blood Tribe, but that could be wrong. But Melody is a classically trained musician, but also uses the percussion of traditional Indigenous drums. So you're getting like the all of that. And so that person, to me, if that person has not, you know, considered going that route, that person should. So that's my sonic suggestion.
What was the name again?
Melody McIver, McIver.
Yep.
And you'll find them on Spotify, and you'll find that person has like 1,000 views on their music, and it's stupid, and it's fantastic. So I'm a food person, so I gotta give a food, you know, Filipino food in Los Angeles. You gotta go to Lasita, Lasita. Lasita is the shit. Filipino food done very comfy, cozy, but also very classic California cuisine. So that's my shout out for food. I'm gonna do a throwback because I don't know how many people know this movie or not, and I'm sure you guys do, but did you guys ever watch a movie in 2015 called The Lure? L-U-R-E, The Lure.
Yes.
I did not either. No.
Wild movie. It's a rock horror musical pop horror.
Already into it.
Yeah, and female director, I don't know ever know how to say her name, Agnieszka Smokzina. So the lore. And my very last weird thing, just because, you know, it's me, I got to do something different.
Fuck yeah.
I'm very into crystals, all right? Like, always have been, always will be. Haters gonna hate. But I specifically go directly to mines or miners to buy my crystals. I don't go to gem shops, okay?
Oh, shit, okay.
Like, that's like low level. So here's my suggestion to anybody who's a rock hound. I go to a mine called Avant, A-V-A-N-T, Avant Mines in Arkansas, where they actually do a lot of testing. The government does a lot of testing on crystals and quartz crystals in the Avant Mines. So this fucking piece is
that's cool as hell.
Yeah.
So this is a little smoky piece, up from Arkansas. And then the Crystalline Connection is, one of the miners I go to, and he mines himself out of like Namibia, Congo. And I do a lot of like hand digging. So that's to segue into that. The next thing that I'm writing right now, which I'm on the last page of, and I'm very excited about, and it's a feature, is a bit of a crystal horror. So
excited
about cool. that. inspired by my time working in Lake Louise, Alberta. So very excited.
Wow. Oh, that sounds rad.
There's a part of me that wants a crystal slasher that like breaks out in Ojai. Like just a slasher that just starts taking out just like white crystal shops that are just like
oh my god, I love it.
Sounds a knife made of quartz. Just like, yeah.
I'll just dump what I'm writing and I'll just start.
Well, you absolutely killed today. Thank you so much for joining us. And I can't go look out for Aftertaste at a festival near you. That was the word I was looking for, festival. I love shorts. Yeah, we didn't get into this earlier. I love shorts anyway. So like, I just like there's just something really cool about even like, you know, short stories or short movies. Like if you can back a beginning, middle, and end, hey,
cameo appearance.
Who's that?
My clone. I clone.
Right now, during the episode, she cloned. <That's pretty rad. laughs>
This is Brandon Cronenberg's Infinity Pool Part 2. Just kidding. I'm kidding. That's a joke.
Like, who's Brandon Cronenberg?
guys, what a pleasure. It's so easy to talk to such amazing folks. And, you know, I love what you're doing. And it's just so fun. So thank you. What an honor.
Thank you.
We love what you're doing.
The honor's ours.
Yeah, anytime you want to talk ghosts, crystals, just call me up.
I'll hit you up, absolutely.
Absolutely. And I hope that Aftertaste hits some sort of a platform for more people to be able to see it, because it needs to be seen more. It's so good. So onward and upward as far as that goes.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, it's the first one. You can only go it could go bad from here.
Listen, you could have the Peter Jackson bad taste to what he does now, a career. You never know. Like
true. Yeah.
Thanks for everybody worldwide tuning in. We appreciate you. And until we see you next time, please go start some fires and break some glass. Thank you.